All right, great. Well, good morning, everybody. This is Chris Whalen, CPA, and I want to welcome you to this special edition of the Street Level Business Podcast. Today, I'm going to be interviewing Alan Collins of the studentloanjustice.org. And he's fighting for transparency and logic in the student loan system that we have today. We heard a lot in the news about it. And I'm going to ask Alan a series of questions. And he has a lot of great information. One of the most informed people on this issue that I've ever talked to. So good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Chris. Happy holidays.
Yeah. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. So I want to start with the first thing is that a lot of people don't understand how the student loan system works and what we think the problems are. And you have a fantastic car analogy that you went over with me already. So if you could take some time and elucidate that, it really helped me understand things a lot better about what's going on.
Sure. You know, so a good analogy is, you know, picture yourself, say you buy a car online. It comes well recommended, well referred. You show up to the lot and you pick up your brand new car. You're driving it off the lot and you're headed down the road. And you look down and you realize there's no brakes on the car. There's no brake pedal. So you rear end the guy in front of you, you wind up in a ditch. You go back to the dealership and say, hey, there's no brakes on this car. And they say to you, hey, buddy, you know, you should have read the manual. This particular model doesn't come with brakes. So that would be the base analogy, Chris, but it's even more sinister than that, truly. Like, so just to draw it out a bit, imagine you're waiting for a tow truck at the dealership and you overhear the salesman over the wall talking about how they're going to spend the money that they're going to get from an insurance policy they took out against you. That is a more accurate analog of what is actually going on with student loans today. These are sort of designed to fail lending instruments, and all of the risk has been put directly on the borrower's back, taken away from the colleges, taken away from the lending companies, and even taken away from the federal government, which runs this whole thing. So it's really probably the worst sort of predatory lending that you can imagine. And it's gone off the cliff at this point. It's gone sort of over the rails.
Right. I have over 30 years experience analyzing business deals and contracts. And I've never seen such a lopsided contract where there's so little responsibility on the one side. So let's just think about it, that all a college needs to do to get your tuition and never have to repay it is to give you a seat in a classroom up to the add drop date. That's it. So if you have a child that has all five classes, they've gone through enough time in that semester, sometimes a very short amount of time, your money's lost forever with no refund and no recourse. So it's totally unconscionable to me. One of the most expensive things we pay for, and there's zero responsibility almost on the other side. I believe it's one of the largest consumer fraud issues I've ever seen in my career with the numbers that we're talking about. Would you agree with that?
You're exactly right. You know, student loans are unlike any other loans you can talk about. Unlike every other loan, federal student loans certainly are stripped of bankruptcy protections, something demanded in the Constitution. They're stripped of statutes of limitations. They're exempted from fair debt collection practice laws, from truth in lending laws. Even state usury laws are not applicable to federal student loans.
I know.
So these are less lending contracts, I would say, than maybe bonds of indenture. And when you remove bankruptcy protections, you give the other side essentially a license to steal. And the colleges are sitting in the catbird seat. They do everything they can to not inform the students about the uniquely vicious and predatory nature of these loans. Like, for example, when you're going through entrance loan counseling, they don't say, "And oh, by the way, these loans are not dischargeable in bankruptcy." No. They say, these loans are dischargeable in bankruptcy if you can prove undue hardship. So to an 18-year-old kid, that sounds pretty reasonable, right? Yeah, I mean, right. I think to anybody. But the fact of the matter is that this undue hardship standard is essentially impossible to prove. Right. So the colleges, the bad faith that they are operating with is just astounding.
And I think to put a dot on that I or cross that T that you just made is, if you ask any parent that is sending their child to a four-year school, they will say 100% of the time, they assume the child is going to have a life-supporting job when they're done with the 4 years. That's the only reason why they're going through this and taking out the debt. And so parents don't understand, there is not a college in the world that agrees with that. So this is the fraudulent disconnect. Every parent and every child agrees, I'm only going to 4 years so I can leave my parents' house. You have all of these former students who are living at home in their mid-20s feeling terrible about themselves, but they've done everything they're supposed to do. And they're carrying the debt. So that's part of the human element here, the emotional trauma that's happened to students, not only this financial trauma. I see it in my practice every day. So I want parents out there to realize that the schools do not want you to graduate in 4 years. They have a financial incentive to let you go. As Alan told me before we started recording this, that fewer and fewer students are graduating in 4 years. They're graduating in 6 years. So they're getting 50% more tuition than they've ever gotten in the past, right? So parents have to be doing their homework, checking majors when they go to a school. Just don't be excited that Susie got the acceptance letter from a school. We need to know, what are we doing? What are we buying? And the school has to give you information about their placement history, the amount of dollars that placement is giving in terms of a job, right? Am I making sense, Alan?
That's exactly right. And also, I might add, you know, when you ask the college about what their default rate is, they will probably lie to you. They will probably say, oh, our default rate is low. It's, 6%. Well, what they are actually telling you is the cohort default rate, which is a very misleading metric, which only measures defaults that happen in the first couple, three fiscal years after graduation. The true default rate of these schools is typically 4 or 5 times higher. So be aware of that.
Wow. All right. And final advice I give parents is that if you're not sure what major your child wants to have, try to never send them to a four-year expensive school. And don't take out any loans on something unless you know I'll be able to pay them. And that's only when I want to have a life-supporting major with a life-supporting job coming from that. So I urge parents to send their kids to community college and pay for that cash for 2 years. And if they get to the point where they want to go to a four-year school, but it shouldn't be the 13th grade at a high school, right? This is too expensive for them. So we have to have real life conversations with our kids and say, well, you need to go for a major that's going to give you a life supporting job. And if not, we don't want to take out loans. I don't want to take out loans to finance losses. Just like I told all my business owners with the business loans that happened with the EIDL loans and PPP loans, with the COVID last year, I told them, don't spend any of this money on the loans and let to finance debts, right? So the same thing here. You want to be rarely take out loans unless you do your homework. All right, so let's start about, Mike, I have a question here. Why is there such a reluctance to place blame on the educational institutions that are failing our children? It's rare you hear anything other than we got to bail this out. Your neighbors have to pay for my student loans. So why do you think that is? What is the political reason why hardly any politicians are talking about this in a rational way?
That's kind of a loaded question, but you know, the colleges and universities have a very strong grip, both at the federal and the state level politically. You know, look at any number of politicians when they leave office, they typically go and teach at a college or even are president of the universities. And, you know, obviously everybody values education in this country. So the colleges have been sitting in the catbird's seat. And I have to say, they've never been more awash in cash than they are today. The balance sheets of colleges and universities in this country today is the thing of envy. They have money over and above even their endowments. And I would call it a slush fund. Others have as well. But these so-called slush funds, I call them, are probably rival the size of all combined college endowments in this country. So the colleges are just doing absolutely great. And, you know, that they still fight very hard to get increased funding from both their state and federal governments. Quite frankly, I find that deplorable, but that's just me.
Now, I thank you for that. I was very excited that there is a bill that's looking in the Senate that they're looking to pass the Fresh Start Through Bankruptcy Act. So tell us a little bit about that, who's backing that in the Senate, and why you think it's important.
Yeah, you know, the founding fathers called for uniform bankruptcy laws ahead of the power to declare war and raise an army. And this student loan catastrophe is proof of their wisdom in spades. Bankruptcy should have never been taken away from this lending system. It has caused all manner of corruptions and bad faith and everything we've discussed earlier. So finally, after 16 years of doing this, I'm very happy to report that we've got a great bill, as you say, S-2598 in the Senate. This would return standard bankruptcy protections to federal student loans with a 10-year waiting period. So it's not perfect, but it's pretty good. But maybe as important, this bill would put the colleges on the hook to repay up to half of the original loan amount in the case where the loans are discharged. This is absolutely critical for keeping the lenders honest, for keeping the colleges honest, probably more importantly, and keeping the prices rational and stable. You know, it's a very good reason for bankruptcy, and it goes well beyond just giving people an out to, you know, skate on their debt.
Well, it shows in two ways they're getting treatment that no one else gets. Number one, we talked about before, that they have there's no recourse against them when their degrees don't work, like the car that didn't have brakes. So we bought the degree. If I have a degree that I can't get a job that lets me pay for the student loan that pay for the degree, don't we all see that problem? The failure is in the degree and not in the student, right? And then now we have the second way that, oh, they're getting special treatment that they can't be discharged in bankruptcy. So to me, it sounds like the schools, although they seem like they are liberal institutions, they're part of the 1%, right? This is what 1%ers, everyone complains about the 1%. No one gets better treatment than the colleges. There's no one else in the 1% that gets this kind of treatment and this protection, right?
So that's exactly right. And with essentially unlimited supply of loan funds, courtesy of the federal government, we're going to see increasingly nonsensical degrees. And you can fill in the blank, you know, underwater basket weaving is a popular one, but you get the point. The colleges there's got to be some good sense lending ethics going on here. And that will only happen when the threat of bankruptcy is back on the right table.
Well, I think the problem is in the pricing, right? Because me being a business CPA, let's say, so we're really, even though there's credit hours we're paying for in college, but we're really paying for a future income from those, right? So I can't charge a social worker, who's one of the most important people in the world, the same rate that I can charge a CPA. I'm going to make a lot more money potentially with the same credit hour. So that's part of the problem here. I can't charge, Harvard shouldn't charge a social worker the same, a social work major. So that's also, and we also should limit the total amount of student loans. So I think that the total amount of student loans that you should get is 50% of the first year average salary of your major. You're an accountant, I have a larger student loan potential because I can make more money. But social workers are put in a position of having to pay back student loan debt that a CPA could pay for. That's the disconnect. If you look at it from a business perspective, it's that we have to get specific as to what we're buying. We're buying something, and I'm buying a result, right? I'm buying a potential salary. So that has to dictate what I pay, doesn't it? Partly. So
you would hope so. You know, I don't know how one would go about actually controlling the prices of tuition. That might be a little difficult, but I do know that by putting the threat of bankruptcy back on the table, lenders, including the federal government, they're not going to be willing to lend, you know, $50,000, $100,000 to somebody.
All right. Well, we all know it's a moral hazard. Look at the bloated tuitions, look at the bloated staffing. You know, it's just like there's only two institutions where prices haven't come down. Medicine, because there's no transparency, and an education. They're monolithic, not transparent. And so without transparency becomes waste and moral hazard, right? That's what's happened. Both of those are good examples, right?
Exactly. And I might add, the price of college has risen even quicker than the price of healthcare over the past 20 years, which
unbelievable.
Is really saying something.
Well, tell us two things. What can we be doing? What should parents be thinking of with regard to this, who have student loans, but also have not started the process yet? Let's say we have a junior in high school child what suggestions would you ask them to look out for and to do their homework on? And then tell everyone where to find you and how to reach out to you.
Well, my first bit of advice is, if you can possibly avoid it, don't borrow, period. We have seen these loans destroy families, particularly Parent PLUS loans and private student loans with cosigners. They're so dangerous. Without bankruptcy, without statutes of limitations, these can really wreck families. So just don't borrow if you can possibly do it. Beyond that, I would say everybody needs to be fighting for S-2598. It's a bipartisan bill. Republicans Josh Hawley, John Cornyn are on the bill, along with the sponsor Dick Durbin from Illinois. It's a very important bill. It really lies at the heart of this whole problem. And if people want to come by our website and help out, you know, everything helps, studentloanjustice.org, our Facebook group and our state chapters and everything. It's a pretty tough problem, Chris. I have to tell you, there's a lot of resistance in Washington, D.C. The colleges, the lenders, the whole apparatus, I call the student loan swamp. They are worried right now. And so it's going to be a tough fight for us. But I think when the people band together, we can finally shine some light on this problem and get it solved.
I just threw your website up so people could take a look at it quick, so they could maybe back up if they want to see, right? That's what your website looks like, so they can. Well, Alan,
we're seeing the Senate right now, so calling your senators is key.
Well, Alan, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it so much. This is such a timely thing, and you're doing such good work behind the scenes. I don't think people understand how much time you're devoting, but thank you so much. And let's catch up again in a few months to see where that bill is.
Well, thank you, Chris. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Thank you, Alan.